This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Thursday. Almost at the end of the week. Yes. Big thanks and shout out to Wise Guys Comedy Club in Utah for the hosting and hospitality for the live ALN podcast last night in Salt Lake City. Unbelievable. Great turnout, great crowd, great ALN fan support. It was so fun. Live podcasts are the best. I'm so glad we have more coming up in Austin at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival and in Vegas at the Crapshoot Comedy Festival. Those dates, April 20th through the 22nd in Austin and May 18th through the 20th in Vegas. So fun. Thank you everyone that came out. Thanks again to our buddy Marcus for coming on and crushing it. That episode will be posted in the next few weeks, so be on the lookout for that. Today's episode... Holy shit, a comedian from Seattle, so I love that, really grinded it out here in L.A., was an engineer at Boeing. His journey into comedy and finding his voice and becoming one of the most fun comics to watch on stage, not only thought of by the audience, but by the L.A. comedy community. He's a fan favorite. He's a great joke writer. He's animated on stage. He had a great sketch group for a while called Goatface Comedy. He's got an amazing alter ego character called Lance Cantstopoulos that we get into. We cover it all, as well as his new special that just dropped on CISO today. You can get it streaming today on CISO, called There's No Business Like Show Business. Talking about Fahim Anwar, baby. Fahim Anwar. Heard of that name? Probably. And if you haven't, you will. He'll be a household name, man. He's one of those guys, just so funny, undeniably so funny, and he's, you know, from the Pacific Northwest, so he has a special place in my heart. This episode is so fun. Fahim is just a great hang, a great dude, and if you get a chance to see him live, you got to. So enjoy the hell out of this episode, and please get his special on CISO. There's no business like show business. Sign up for CISO, get a special. You will not be disappointed. Tweet at us, tweet at him, tell him you love the episode of the podcast and that you love this special. Follow him on Twitter at Fahim Anwar, FahimAnwar. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast, at ALN Podcast on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for all the ALN merch. Get all that shit, bring it out to the shows, we'll sign it, take pictures. Our merch home is now, again, at aboutlastnightpodcast.com, and get your ALN merch. When you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, if you've given it a 5-star rating and commented on the iTunes page, then go to our podcast site, aboutlastnightpodcast.com, get your merch, bring it to the shows, and show the love, baby, huh? So many great shows coming up, by the way. This weekend, I am in New York City at one of my favorite clubs on planet Earth, Gotham Comedy Club in Chelsea. It's one of the best clubs I've ever been to, one of the best clubs in New York. Can't wait. Sandy Danto coming out, Avery Pearson, we're doing music. I got special guests popping in, a new hour since last time I was there, which I'm very pumped on. Hopefully going to shoot that soon. So get your tickets at GothamComedyClub.com. I'll be there tomorrow, Friday, two shows, Saturday, two shows, and Sunday, one show. And then I'm back to L.A. And on March 14th in Los Angeles, Tuesday, 8:30, Adam Ray and Buddies at the Comedy Store. Me, Harlan Williams, Dana Carvey, Kevin Nealon, Elijah Schlesinger, Dion Cole, Josh Wolfe, Carol Leeper. Holy shit, this lineup is so stacked. Tickets you can get at comedystore.com. I highly recommend you come. 8:30, March 14th. That's a Tuesday at the Comedy Store main room. And then next weekend, I'll be in Dallas, Texas at the Addison Improv, co-headlining with my boy Amir K from Mad TV. That's Dallas, Texas, Addison Improv, March 16th through the 18th. Get your tickets at AdamRayTV.com. Brad Williams this weekend, where Brad's on the road just nonstop. He's in East Providence, Rhode Island this weekend at the Comedy Connection. I'm sorry. That's where he is next weekend. This weekend, he's in Orlando, Florida, hanging out with Mickey Mouse and Shaq and Tiger Woods, his wife, at the Orlando Improv, March 9th, 10th, and 11th. Get your tickets at improv.com. And the next weekend, March 16th through the 17th, at the Comedy Connection in East Providence, Rhode Island. All right? A lot of great guests coming up. More episodes, more fun. If you haven't subscribed on iTunes, do so. Go back, listen to past eps. This one today, one of my favorites. Chris Porter returns next week, as well as my buddy Ben Lyons from E! And from ESPN and from ESPN LA, as well as the return of Theo Vaughn. All right? So much great shit coming. So make sure you are subscribed on iTunes so you can get the fun every Monday and Thursday. And check out our promo videos that we, our promo video. We've dropped one on my Instagram and YouTube channel, and the other one's getting ready to drop in a few weeks. All right, I think that's it. So now that we've got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles and the merch info. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, the very funny Fahim Anwar.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
It's like 40 minutes away from all this, where we're at in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So I would drive up at night, and I would get really sleepy, because it's the end of the night, and I have to drive back to my apartment in Long Beach.
That's crazy that you did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ever look back on like all the stuff you did and think about if you had to do it over? You're like, I don't know if I have it in
No. me. If somebody mapped out like or showed you like a little reel of like your life, what it's going to look like to have to do what you need to do. But again, like, and we've talked about this before, that delusion and you, that,
yeah, that's your fuel.
Yeah,
it is. You need it. If you knew how hard it was to be a successful stand-up comic, no one would ever do this. Mm-hmm. And if, like, the same way you lived in Long Beach, I lived in Fullerton, California, Orange County for years. I just moved to Hollywood
even
like
further,
a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, you drive out to the Laugh Factory, do one set, and then drive back. And or do one audition. And like, well, if I had one audition, that was my day.
Yeah.
Cause
sometimes I would just hang out. Like, I didn't even have a gig. I would like drive all the way up just to be a ghost at the Improv. People were walking through me. I remember those times, man.
But you know what? That's what you do, because you want people to associate you with stand up and being a comedian. And like, oh yeah, that's Fahim. He's a stand up comic.
Yeah. You kind of realize just leaving your apartment is a big part of being.
There's only so much you can do when you like sitting at your place and messaging people, can I be on your show, is not grinding.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a piece of that of like building, you know, if you've built the relationship, you went out that night, you met some guy, you got back home and you followed up or you, like that is, but just,
you got to have a percentage of everything. You have to have a percentage of actually getting up. You have to have a percentage of, you know, grinding on Facebook and be hitting people up for shows.
Yep.
And then there is a percentage of hanging out. Some people do too much hanging out and not enough getting up.
Dude, yes.
There are a lot of people that I know just for hanging out. I've never seen them actually do stand-up.
Yeah.
But I guess they're comedians. I've heard that. They've posted photos on Instagram of flyers of shows that they're going that they're going to do.
And that's what's so funny about our art form is that anyone can just declare themselves as such.
Yeah, because there's no comedy police.
Yeah,
and there's no,
anybody can just say I'm a comedian. Nobody can say I'm a neurosurgeon.
That is the and that's the one, like, as great as this profession is, like, I mean, what is that that people can just get up, take a picture of them at the Laugh Factory, do it four times, and go and put like hashtag comedy life. And then all their friends go, God, look at you doing it.
But that's also what's frustrating, hustling, even at our level, where we've done some stuff. And, but do you know how famous you have to be for the average person to know you as a comedian.
Yeah.
So even though like we're no slouches or anything,
yeah.
when you're in an Uber or they're like, what do you do? Or you tell a stranger, like, oh, I'm a comedian. They feel sorry. You know, deep down, they're like, this guy.
Oh, man. Dude, that happened to my Uber to the airport yesterday.
I've done some shit.
I got in a fucking legitimate argument because he goes, oh, traveling all the time, that must be the worst. And I just go, actually, it's the greatest thing ever, dude. I go, what do you do? He goes, oh, I work in like blah, blah, blah. I go, do you love it? He goes, no. I go, I love what I do. I go, and the traveling, I go, I have no wife and kids. What do you have? He goes, both. I go, there you go, man. I go, stop the fight.
You go, let me out.
By the way, Delta Airlines. And drop me off here. It's a Quiznos, but I'll walk. Your negative energy sucks.
I always say I'm an engineer now, just because it nips the conversation in the bud. If you say you're a comedian in an Uber, like, you're going to talk for a while.
Yeah, I know. Well, especially out here.
Yeah, that and when you say, oh, I'm a comedian, you get the, oh, you're a comedian, tell me a joke. I'm sure people say, like, oh, I'm an aerospace engineer. No one goes, like, build me an airplane.
No.
Right now.
Then it just gets very
design
quiet.
Me an airplane.
No, just the conversation ceases and the Spotify goes up.
That's the craziest Uber experience you've... There's a bit in your special about...
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way... And I texted you. So good.
Oh, well done. Thanks, guys. Yeah. Thank you.
On many levels.
You're special. There's no business like show business.
Correct.
Now you can get it on CISO on demand. So as you're listening to this, you go, hey, I like Fahim. Just go to CISO.
Yeah.
And do it. Just watch it.
CISO's getting increasingly more popular, too, which I love. I feel like the timing of your special hitting, it's like they've had a handful now on there.
Yeah.
And it's like more of a...
It's kind of nice to see some peers on there.
Yes.
You know, like, I love Rory, Nick, and, you know, Joey Diaz has one, Stanhope.
Lachlan.
So they're kind of, they're building their library.
And when you get names like Doug Stanhope and Joey Diaz and Janine Garofalo, that who all have specials on CISO, like, that adds, because I'll admit, when I first heard people like, yeah, my special's on CISO, I'm like, oh, so... Yeah.
It takes a while to build.
Is that a thing? Like, I don't know. Is that something that I should be...
It's so funny.
...watching?
But remember having that same feeling about Netflix? It's like nothing something until it's something.
Yeah, and that is...
Wow,
a nice
did you read that on a fortune cookie, Adam Ray?
You know what?
Like, nothing something until it's something.
Sometimes I say things that don't sound profound or smart,
well,
but they actually have some
it.
Substance.
I have this quote that's kind of along the same lines.
Yeah.
Like, my quote is like, you're not a thing until you're a thing.
Yeah.
And then... The only reason you're a thing is because you're a thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's what, Fahim, you're speaking the Adam Ray language.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. No, it's so right. So
I
like,
just want to listen to you two go back and forth with inspirational messages.
It sounds like bullshit, but in your heart of hearts, you get it.
But then you think about it and you break it down.
People from the Pacific Northwest are really smart. We just don't want to rub it in your face. We dumb down how intelligent our proverbs actually are.
That's what coffee does to you, man.
I do want to put a pin in that Uber story, but your parents, both from Afghanistan.
Right.
Also beautifully talked about in the special. Did they, growing up, have, just speaking of like us talking about like, you know, hilarious, not properly worded anecdotes, I know they weren't for your comedy. At least your father wasn't, right?
Yeah.
But did they, like, was there advice or any, like, anecdotes or nuggets of, like...
My dad's like, you got to get him up top and then... No. You got to close strong.
No, he was never...
No.
Well, but not for comedy, but for life?
My dad's always, you know, dispensing pearls of wisdom, but it's kind of like immigrant dad wisdom, which is like be a doctor and have this house and all this stuff. Yeah. It's like boilerplate stuff.
Like, they're really, especially from Afghanistan, like, when you tell your parents, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian, did they have a frame of reference? Like, did they know what that was?
Yeah. What's interesting about... I would say,
and I don't know how long they lived here, so I could be very condescending right now.
No,
be
they,
like,
they're well
do they
aware.
Know about
no,
laughing?
Yeah, they know. It's so interesting because, like, my dad loves Steve Martin; like, he's one of his favorites.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing with Afghans is like they love art, but they want their children to have nothing to do with it. So we're like
someone else. Well,
they want us to be purely consumers.
Yeah.
And once you get into it's
kind of like porno. You want to watch porno. You don't want your sister to be in porno.
Yeah, pretty
like
much.
Like someone else can make it.
Uh-huh.
No one from my family.
I think those are equals, actually. Yeah.
It's you know what? You say that kind of jokingly, but it's kind of it's along those same lines. Like cuz at least for my daughter does porn, like okay. All right. Like I know what that is. Like you say, "Oh, my son, he's a comedian." Like we said before, there's no clarification of like what is a comic or when are you allowed to call yourself a comedian.
Right. And it's hard enough for, say, a white parents to know what that entails, and then for my parents from Afghanistan to know what that path is to.
Yeah.
It's like just saying what's ridiculous. I want to be in the NFL, or it's ludicrous to them.
Yeah. So when you were in Seattle, which is where you started stand up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And stop us if you've regurgitated the story, but I mean, so you won. There was a contest, right?
The Apollo, or what do you mean?
Yeah, in Seattle.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your interest in stand up prior to that? Because that was your first time on stage.
No, it wasn't the first
time. Oh, was it?
No, like I think I was 19 when I did that Apollo show. Okay, I talk about it in the special.
Yeah.
I close with this. It's a great story.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah. But I think I was doing stand up right after I graduated high school.
Okay.
So I went to Woodinville High School.
Nice.
And then I think at the end of the year, I did some comedy. I did like 30 minutes of stand-up, which is absurd.
Dude, the amount of 30-minute gigs I did my first week
crazy. We were prolific, bro.
I mean, the amount of Charlie Brown 12-minute act-out bits that I did.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, but again, that delusion. You're like, to get up there with that comments to even try 30 minutes at that age and that early on is crazy.
You look back at that even 5 years in there and go, well, how did I talk for 30 minutes?
Where were you in 30 minutes?
I don't even know what I was talking, huh?
Not in an open mic.
No, it was we did it for the school. We put on this assembly thing, a comedy night.
Oh,
so
great.
It was in the theater. And
did it go well?
It was great. But it's all my friends and stuff, and it's school, so it's a very insulated environment.
Totally. But I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like the timing and just like your natural like observational skills and physicality has always been there. Yeah.
Yeah. From the start. Yeah.
You were like that with your friends and everything. And
yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
And you get closer to it the longer you do stand up. I think you know this well, or any stand up is just the longer you do it is the closer you get to you off stage, on stage.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I started with that 30-minute set, and then I started going to the Comedy Underground because Pam Mann, I don't know if because you're from Seattle.
Yeah.
Pam Mann was part of Unexpected Productions.
I know of them. They did
they're like our groundlings.
They did the Jet City Improv, the one at the
Pike Place Market.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You go downstairs.
Yeah.
And so she was teaching an improv unit for, you know, our theater department. And so we did that for 2 weeks, and she was at that comedy night and saw me do stand up for 30 minutes, and she was like, "Oh, my friend does stand up at the Comedy Underground. You should do a set there." And because I didn't know about that world at all, I'm just like a 18-year-old kid in Woodinville, Washington. So she kind of held my hand for me to do my first set at the Comedy Underground. I did 5 minutes. It's probably very whatever, but it just
got me a lot easier than 30.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know how I'm going to pare this down. There's so much
much material.
Yeah. You're really asking a lot here, Pam.
Yeah. Can I do 10? That's
a lot of great. But fingers. Also an essential move. Like, again, you need that person to walk you.
Yeah, and I've thought about this. If she wasn't there to kind of shepherd me into the Comedy Underground, I don't know if I would be doing what I'm.
Isn't that crazy?
Maybe I would in some, but she was essential.
It could have taken longer. Like, it happened then. And I remember, I don't know if I met you, but I think I did at Giggles one night.
Okay.
I was in town doing
it's
the
open so strange
mic.
Because we became friends more so in LA.
Yeah.
But you're from Seattle.
Yeah.
So
because I graduated from high school in June, the end of June, and then moved down here to go to school second week of August. So it was like, but in my head I was like, I want to be on SNL one day, and I know a lot of those guys come from a stand-up background.
That's exactly how I got into stand-up.
Yeah. I was like, so I need to do the guys I knew. I didn't know of Sketch and Groundlings. I was like, oh, they're all comics, so I need to have that background at some point.
Yeah.
So let me start now. And also I was like, if I do a few open mics and I move to LA, then I can call myself a comic. I wanted to like to have a little experience before I moved to LA. And so I went to Giggles, and I remember seeing you and Jeff Dye there. And dude, even I don't know how many years you've been at that point. This is 2001, but I remember just seeing you, and I think you talked about the engineering stuff, and I was like, oh man, this guy's so funny, and he doesn't even do this. Like, it just was really intimidating. But also I remember he had a joke too, and I don't know if you remember this, but it was about and it is how I knew I really was like, oh, this could be a cool, fun thing to do, because I was like, I think similarly to some of these guys. I used to always talk about the Lifetimes of the Rich and Famous shows, or like the VH1s,
J-Lo. I used to have some bit of
it was like the Sweet Life of Jennifer Lopez.
Right. That's what it was.
And it was like, because they would be like, you know, Jennifer Lopez has a $14 million house carved with Italian fancy marble, but not the best, but not like any marble. It's the marble made of like Zimbabwe children's tears.
And her face cream was made out of like ground up fetuses from a third world country. It was just something absurd.
But dude, it was, I had like so been thinking about that. So when I was like, it was really inspiring because I was like, oh fuck, like I think along the same lines. And then it was like, okay, and hearing you like break it down and have like a punch and setup, I was like, all right, it definitely gave me like hope in that moment, which is
crazy. Cool.
But that, you don't do that bit anymore, do you?
No, I mean, if I was doing that 14 years later, just like,
it's like when I finally
remember that show.
How funny, like, I haven't grown since that 30 minutes of stand up I did in high school. I'm just doing the same.
Yeah, that's how we got the special. That 30 minutes was that tight, that good.
I just did it twice. That's my hour special. Yeah.
Now, at this point, when you're doing stand up in Seattle, are you even thinking in terms of like, this is what I want to do, or are you just like, this is a really cool hobby that I'm sometimes
into?
No,
it was like very calculated and premeditated, kind of like how Adam was. Like I loved SNL and I wanted to be on that show, so I Googled. I don't know if it was, maybe it was Dogpile. I don't know if we had Google. No, I'm dating. Remember the search? We didn't have Google, but remember like, back in the day before Google, you had to do Hotbot or Lycos.
Wow.
Or, Dogpile was like our Google before Google.
Okay.
Really dating myself with the search engine references.
I went on a AOL dial-up, and then mom yelled at me because then she couldn't use the phone.
Then I would be on AOL, and then I would hear like a Daft Punk digitized version of my dad going Melo, and then I would get logged off, and I'm like, Dad,
Dad, I was in a chat room, asking people for their age, sex, and location.
We didn't have Snapchat; we had to log on. SNL.
So you're searching.
I was like, how do people get on that show? And then I found out it was either through improv, like Second City, Groundlings, or UCB. It was kind of new at the time. And I went to all their websites and researched how it worked. And then you got to pay money. There's classes. And then half of them came from stand-up. And I'm like, oh, I could do that. Because it's going to be hard to get money and tell my parents I'm going to go to clown college pretty much.
Yeah.
And then
you can just do it on your own.
And then you're also beholden to all these other people. You need other people to do improv.
Yeah.
They could hold you back if they don't deem you
you need their schedules. You need them to be able to work with you.
Yeah,
you need them to get along with them.
You need to pay money. So there's just like a lot more barriers of entry.
Right.
So I thought stand-up was the most viable thing. So I was like, I'll do stand-up.
Wow.
And then all this time while you're studying to get a real job, and not just a real job in terms of sitting in a desk or whatever, like aerospace engineer,
right?
Like that's like you're smart as fuck.
I guess I'm good at jumping through hoops, or I'm good at math, and I have a high tolerance for academic pain or stuff that I'm not super interested. Like, but I can do math, and
you were able
fine.
To find some joy in that field. Yeah,
yeah, sure, it's fun. Like I like doing some math problems, and
yeah. Now, I mean, I don't want to say comedy and like math are completely
the shit that I learned in college in engineering. There are some transferable skills.
Yeah,
like, not that like my jokes are very precise and analytical. That's what I love about comedy, is it's so organic. But the work ethic and maybe placement of bits. There is some sort of similar thoughts that go into
sure. Both. And as you do it longer, you figure out. I don't want to, like, I use the term formula loosely, but there is, like, okay, this is the rhythm of a joke that works for me.
I would say structure. Like, you learn structure.
Yeah, you don't use the Pythagorean theorem to develop your straight out of Compton bit, but, like, but there are similarities as far as, like, which would be amazing if that was, like...
Now, did you know any lame math jokes? Because I had, like, math teachers in high school that told me the worst, like...
Yeah, why were math teachers the ones who always wanted... They're like airline attendants, which, again, you tackle in your special.
Right.
You're like, no, math is fun. See, you could do a joke.
They always, to me, were the ones that were like, yeah, this seems like an appropriate time to insert some comedy. Like,
Maybe because it's so dry and boring.
Yeah.
Like, we got to zest this up. 7, 8, 9.
Who was your guys'... did you have a math teacher that did that or... Did you have any teacher that encouraged Fahim's comedic endeavors?
I don't know about like comedy. Yeah, well, I kept the world separate. Nobody in college knew that I did stand-up.
And you weren't even like the jokester in class.
I mean, I was in elementary school and stuff, and then we moved school systems. I was in Mukilteo, like OV. I went to middle school there, and then Serene Lake. I don't know if you know Serene Lake.
I do.
So I went to elementary school there.
Wow.
And then I think like in sixth or seventh grade, we moved to Woodinville. So I'm in a new school system. I can't be as boisterous because it's all new people.
Yeah, you're the new guy.
So I'm still funny, but I'm like more reserved, and I'll only do it amongst a smaller group of friends. But I'll do assemblies, and I'll do like sketches and videos. But I'm not big man on campus.
Well, yeah, and you're not putting yourself completely out there because these are new people. You don't trust them yet. And you don't want to be the guy that just comes into a new school and goes, "Hey, everybody, I'm the funny guy." And everyone just goes like, fuck you. No, you're not.
Yeah.
By the way, how was that? Just going from like bouncing. I mean, I never had
it
to do
sucked.
That.
I hated it at first because we moved during the summertime and just that whole summer.
There goes your summer.
I was just playing PlayStation. I was playing Tekken upstairs like the whole summer.
Fuck yes. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, there is after a couple of weeks. You can only see so many cutscenes.
You a Yoshimitsu or a King guy?
I was Eddie Gordo.
Eddie Gordo. Okay. Good character. Adam has no idea what the fuck we're talking about.
Fuck you.
Oh, you play Tekken?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
That was one of
people
the ones
that's so mad when you're Eddie Gordo. They're like, man, it's bullshit. It's cheating. Because he's just doing all these like helicopter kicks.
I would be Eddie Gordo all the time because I was bad at the game. Yeah. That was one of the few games that wasn't a sports game that I played.
Okay.
Do you remember Sega Saturn?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I was one of the guys that got duped into buying one of those.
Yeah.
I remember
should have waited for Dreamcast.
Yeah, like, this is going to be the thing. Well, and then it wasn't the thing.
Their whole thing was you get 3 free games. And I was like, fuck yeah, dude. But the games were terrible.
They had a baseball game that I liked.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you, were you a big video game guy?
I was. It's so crazy because I'm not anymore. But
I know.
It was such a big part of my life.
Yeah.
I dropped out, like after Xbox, I haven't been in the game.
What was your game?
Let's see. I mean, Tekken was one, and then FIFA, big FIFA guy.
Yeah.
And then, on Dreamcast, it was Virtua Tennis.
Oh, shit.
That was
I don't think I ever played that tennis game.
Yeah.
Was it, so it was pre-Nintendo Wii?
Yeah, so you weren't
before.
Yeah,
Wii.
So you weren't swinging it.
No, I wasn't swinging it. It was just a really good console tennis game.
Now, do you
play it?
And then when you got into FIFA, were you into the time, like, did you continue playing it that you got to like talk online to people? Like,
nah,
were you that
I
era?
Did that. Yeah, never really got online and did that.
Yeah, that's like that's next level. That's when you're trying to like trash talk against 12-year-olds. Yeah. Like, you know, you're going past your love for the video game. Now you're just trying to like.
It's like I'm just looking for an excuse to call a 12-year-old a cunt. Like that's really all I'm doing at that point.
And then Splinter Cell, I was into that.
Which one?
Splinter Cell.
What's that?
Okay,
it's sort of like a Tom Clancy. It's sort of like a Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, you just got Adam really excited because you said Splinter, and he goes, "What?
Yeah, Splinter Cell.
There's fucking new Turtle game that I didn't know about."
I would always go Godfathers and play that Turtle game.
Yes, it was the greatest.
That's the best game, the arcade game.
Yes,
and the Simpsons one with the vacuum cleaner.
So good. I mean, that is my like. If and when I get to a point to where I can just have some fuck you money, I want an arcade.
Yeah, I probably get the X-Men game with the 4 TVs.
1,000%.
Like the tube TVs just glued together because we didn't like the technology wasn't there, and they're like, "What if we glue 4 TVs together? It'll be one big TV."
I mean, we all pretended
we couldn't see the seams.
Yeah, you gotta give the guys props for trying.
Yeah,
you know, they were just trying to invent stuff that didn't exist yet.
It worked for me.
Yeah, why not?
So then you started to hit some open mics. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Comedy Underground was my first foray into it, and then I just kind of kept on going. So that summer, I would drive up to the Comedy Underground, and then Giggles came on my radar, and then Laughs in Bellevue.
Yep.
Or it was Kirkland.
Kirkland, yeah.
No, actually, it was Bellevue, because Laughs is in Kirkland, well, it's in Seattle now. They've had a nice little, they've jumped around. But when it was part of the Ramada Inn.
Oh, wow.
In Bellevue. Yeah, it was like...
This is before they moved to Kirkland.
Yeah, it was just in the lobby of the Ramada Inn. And
so you get a lot of stage time there.
Yeah, and it was on the east side because my parents were in Woodinville. I wouldn't have to cross the bridge to go into Seattle because I was doing college. I couldn't really be hitting the mics during the week. All I had was Friday, Saturday, pretty much.
Wow.
And Dave was cool. He would give me 20 minutes. So I'd do 20 minutes Friday and 20 minutes Saturday.
Wow.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah.
It's amazing when you look back on like who helped you coming up, and then now that you're years into the game, you look back and like how nice you have to be to give a kid 20 minutes that isn't like an established comic.
True, but then conversely, like they don't just hand it to me because they feel bad for me. Like
no,
I was up to the thing. But
you had to be good. But I know a lot of people out here that would just be like 20 minutes. Fuck you. Like you're not doing that much time.
Did you feel like you could grow in two sets a week like that?
Yeah, I was able to do that. I remember I was doing the Giggles Laugh Off.
Yeah.
And I was giving Bradley Lewis a ride one time. You remember Bradley Lewis at all?
No.
Big black guy. He had glasses and he had tape in the bridge. Like, he never got new glasses. It was broken and he just... He was a cool dude.
Yeah.
And I think I was going into the finals of the Giggles Laugh Off. And he was like, you got to run that shit around town. And I had school. I'm like, nah, I can't really. I got the weekends.
Yeah.
And I ended up winning it. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I had my method.
Also, 20 minutes, like, that's...
Yeah, it's a lot of time.
If you're really using it for, you know...
And taping your sets and...
Oh, good. You've always been doing that, yeah?
Yeah. Well, not anymore, just because I've been doing it so long. But yeah. Early on, definitely tape your sets and get the most out of your stage time, because it's precious.
And then how do you get to the point where you go, all right, time to move to L.A.?
That came... Everything was just a natural progression, because I was studying mechanical engineering at University of Washington, and then I got my degree, and the plan was always to get my degree and then get a job in SoCal so that I could do stand-up out here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So it was... Okay, so you... I mean...
From the time I chose my degree till, you know, where I'm at right now, it's all been very... It's been
planned
going...
Out.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Been, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Just when things were supposed to happen weren't...
Of course,
set
we have
stone.
No control over that.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I graduated, and then I applied to a bunch of jobs in Southern California. And I think I got an interview with some cabinet maker called RSI. I think some of their stuff is in Home Depot. They make cabinets and stuff.
Nice.
So I went, interviewed. I didn't get it, which, thank God, because it was in Anaheim.
Oh, shit.
And when you're looking on a Google map in Seattle, L.A. seems much closer.
Yeah.
And it really, like, it would have been so long.
That's before you realize, and yeah, I made that
traffic exists.
I made that drive a ton,
yeah,
so
yeah,
it's shit.
It's brutal.
If someone says, yeah, you have an audition at 3 o'clock, you go, okay, so I have to leave at 1 to get there maybe 5 minutes early,
yeah,
and then I'll get home around 7, like,
again,
for one,
maybe-
like, 5-minute audition.
Yeah. For you to be like, Coke Zero is the best. And they're like, great. We just need you to say it, but you're actually going to be off to the side drinking it on a park bench next to two retarded kids. You're like, great. What is this commercial? It's not a commercial. It's actually a print ad.
But while I was...
It's good that you didn't know actually how far, right? Because again, the delusion...
I guess so. And then when I was staying at my aunt's house in Santa Ana.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And my dad, he was just like, while you're out there, try to get an interview, because he works at Boeing in Everett.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And he just has the Rolodex of all the people.
Great.
So he just sent me some Long Beach people to hit up. So I sent an email, and I wasn't able to interview with them there for time reasons, but I hit them up, and then that contact was made. And when I came back to Seattle, they interviewed me, did a phone interview, and I ended up getting a job at Boeing in Long Beach.
Nice.
So that's how I got out here.
Fuck. And were you... Now, was there any point when you're like, all right, like, I need to say up top to these guys, like, hey, I'm also doing comedy.
Never.
So, yeah.
No. Nobody knew. I worked at Boeing for 3.5 years. Nobody had any idea I did stand up until like 3 days before I quit.
How great was that day? Like, walking in knowing you were going to quit.
Did you leave like a flyer for one of your shows? You
no.
Fuck you. But also, if you guys could come, I need 10 minutes of stage time.
I didn't even want to quit. It was just that I got that disaster date show on MTV, and they needed me for 3 months.
So you kind of, you had to.
Well, I was trying to take a leave of absence.
Yeah.
I was trying to do everything I could to come back after that.
Because I'm sure the pay wasn't horrible.
Well, it's just kind of delusional to be like, my rocket ship's here, guys.
Yeah.
Disaster
date. Taking me to the top, baby.
Yeah.
Right.
Like one disaster date show, and now I'm on or whatever.
Although,
so I wanted to return to my job.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't. And I wasn't saying why. And then I think I wanted unemployment. And I looked up on unemployment, and they said that you can't get it if you leave on your own volition.
Jesus.
So I was trying to get fired.
Oh, wait, what?
So what? Do you just design a plane? Like, all right, here's my idea, guys.
Yeah.
A plane with no wings and no engine.
You mean a bus?
Wings made of biscotti. Come on, guys.
It'll totally work and save money, and then it'll be a delicious in-flight meal. Uh-huh. Come on.
And there's no discussion here. If you don't like it, just fire me.
Yeah.
So I basically I sent an email that, hey, I'll be leaving on this day. I plan on returning. And then I went incommunicado with HR.
Mm-hmm.
Just I wanted them to know that I intended on returning on this date.
Yeah, sure.
And if they thought otherwise, they would have to kill me. Like, you know, I'm not going to die by my own sword.
Yeah.
You tell me that I've been terminated.
Yeah.
And then finally they did after I didn't.
Right.
There you go. And you kind of, you know, we glanced over Disaster Date, but I watched that show because you were on it. Jeff Keith was on it.
Yeah, we were on there.
And I'm always blown away by people. And if those who don't know the show, you guys would go on dates with people that thought they were on real dates.
Yeah, their friends would set them up on a date, and they thought it was legit. That, oh, okay, maybe I'll meet this person my friend thinks is cool.
Right.
And we would be terrible.
And there was a hidden camera, and then you guys had an earpiece, right?
It was like Boiling Points for dating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great idea for a show.
Yeah. And then, like, the longer they're on the date, the more money they get. I don't know, like, how you guys would keep a straight face. Just, like, and to be that dickish to someone that you don't know.
I guess because you want to keep the ruse going, and there's just so much writing on this production that you're not breaking it, it. I think you laugh way more when you're watching it than when you're in it.
Yeah,
because you're like, I got to keep this ball up in the air.
Were there some that were just so hard to, like, a date that was maybe on to you, or you were
I think the first one I ever did, she knew something was up. Like, she left before. It was just so weird. I was like a ghost hunter, and I was looking for shit, and it was just too much. I've got like a contraption. It was just too absurd.
Too weird. And when they start looking around,
yeah, come on. I'm not going to bring my ghost hunting equipment on a date.
So, okay. I could see how one might be a little suspicious of that.
Yeah, but nobody else walked out, I think. Or maybe one other person did, but it was much longer into the date.
You know what, though? In L.A., like, those types of things aren't that crazy, right?
I guess.
I don't think they are, because you drive the streets in L.A. and you see people on the sidewalk that you go, any other city, that would be the weirdest thing that would ever exist.
Yeah.
Here in L.A., it's like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Did you adjust to LA from Seattle, Long Beach, like, pretty well, or did it take you a minute to, not only for the comedy scene, but, like, just life in LA?
It was weird, man. Yeah. Like, yeah, it took some adjustment, because sure, I was living not so much Long Beach, but LA, because I was driving up here to do shows. Just some of the things are things you don't encounter in Seattle at all. Mm-hmm. Like donut time, you know, just like I would see all these, like, men dresses women on Santa Monica Boulevard, and I'm like, why is nobody talking about this? or like, it's like something I don't know about, but everybody else does.
Yeah. Right.
Like, here it's just like, oh yeah, that's where,
that's tranny corn.
yeah, they all hang out at this donut shop. You don't know this?
That was one of my first jokes, because I used to live right by there, and I was like, I don't know what, and I would always see them dancing. So it was dancing trannies, and it was always around the same time. It was like between 3 and 4. I'd always be coming back from my from Universal Studios, and I would see them, and I was like, man, I don't know. And I would go on stage, and never really got a great response, but I was like, it was so personal. I was like, I don't know what,
because it was so new to you, and it's so old hat to them.
But they were like, always dancing, and sometimes I saw them, like, doing synchronized choreography, and I was like, what is it the smell of, like, apple fritters that makes these gals, men, like, want to bump and grind? But they had, like, all these, and I was like, it looks like a fun corner, like, makes being a trainee seem like really appealing. You get to hang out by donuts all the time.
Yeah,
but like,
sounds great. What if you really love the donuts there, and you're just not in that culture, and you're just like, just create donuts.
Yeah, I mean,
everyone thinks that I'm into this other thing, but I just love love their fritters.
What else would you see that was, like, totally culture shock?
I went to the Cafe 101 for the first time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everyone was just dressed so weird, and it's just, man, like, it's so bizarre. And now it's so second nature to me. I don't really see it anymore, but coming from a place like Seattle, and you're at Cafe 101, everyone is, yeah, like a Sims character, like I talk about in the special.
They
just choose their own outrageous outfit, and nobody bats an eye. No one makes fun of anyone because they're equally bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's kind of something great in that, though, too, right?
Yeah.
Of just a freedom. Like, and then...
I mean, as much as there's the judgment, like, there is the acceptance.
There is that thing that nobody has to grow up out here. And the perfect example is the Rock and Roll Ralph's on Sunset Boulevard.
Oh my God.
It's just a regular grocery store, Ralph's. But it's on Sunset Boulevard.
Yep, that's right by my apartment. And so I know it very well.
It's so funny and humanizing, because people in LA get to choose an archetype that they want to be.
Yeah.
They could be like a punk person, or they can be like a hip hop person, or like you're choosing something in a snowboarding game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I saw a dude, like this old rock, and there's no age cutoff too. You could be 55 and dress punk rock.
There's a guy in my building.
No one's like sorry for you. They're like, oh, that's his thing.
Yeah. There's a dude in my building. We call him Grandpa Rock and Roll because he is well over 60, full head of like bleached blonde hair, and he wears leather vests with no shirts, and goes to the gym and works out every fucking day.
I see a guy like this at that Rock and Roll Ralph's holding a plunger. And that was just hilarious to me, that even though you want to be this thing, he still has to unclog this shit out of his toilet. So at the end of the day, you're still a human being.
Yeah, you still have to do human things.
Yeah.
But now you want to be an
eagle.
Right. but I have to do it. Like, I always laugh when, like, I just picture, like, whenever you picture goth kids just doing normal shit.
Yeah.
Like, okay, a goth kid takes his driving test. Like, that's funny to me.
Also, I've always thought about, like, goth kids. You'll see them and they'll have these clothes and, like, so many pins in their pants.
Yeah.
This sort of like I don't care attitude. Like, yeah. If you didn't care, you would just buy some pants from Ross.
Yeah,
right.
Like $2. I'm visualizing you in your room, safety pinning all these. You care so much,
right? Yeah. About not fitting in.
Yeah, yeah.
But then fitting in with the people that also don't want to fit in.
Right.
That you have to. Yeah. It's to be in LA and just see all in. And the crazy part is me as a little person, I know that they're all looking at me going, what the fuck is up with him?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, you're wearing ski goggles and it's July and yeah. You're in Hollywood, but yet you're looking at me like I'm the weird one.
But again, we've talked about this too, like the lack of awareness of like dwarf stereotypes. Like you could wear, you know, some of the outfits that you mentioned in your special, like something insane.
Yeah.
Like, and people would go, oh, that's what dwarfs do.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, like, they really like anime. Yeah. They really like anime characters on their shirts. Like, yeah, that's what we do. It's strange because it's LA, you see people in these weird ass outfits and stuff, and you look at them and go, wait, is that something I need to be doing now? Like, is that a new trend? Yeah. Like, is that something that I don't want to be late to the party to?
Good point. Right? Like seeing something and not having a total awareness set of like making your own paths. You're like, oh, that guy's got a cool jacket and a weird Fu Manchu. Is that? And I think I've seen him on TV. Is that what you do?
But usually they're so outrageous. Yeah. They never become trends.
Yeah,
right. It's like, well,
and
yeah,
they wouldn't want it to either.
Yeah,
no,
this is so outer space.
They
no want to
be the guy that carries a hockey stick wherever he goes. Yeah. Like, unless you're Casey Jones, that's really fucking weird.
So that was so new to me. Just, you know,
where
so.
Would you hang out? Where would you? Because I don't think I saw you coming around. When you were in Long Beach,
yeah.
I would see you at shows here and there, but not as obviously consistently as now.
Right.
Because you were only coming up how many times a
week?
Well,
I was just kind of getting in where I fit in.
Yeah.
So I wasn't getting spots at the store or even the improv, but I was hanging out. Just it was easier to hang out at the improv.
Yeah.
I feel like the improv is neutral waters.
Yep.
Anybody can hang out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The store's like that too, but people kind of feel afraid because if you don't know somebody, because there's that patio.
Yep.
Yeah,
the factory is like Fort Knox.
I mean,
they've got two Kung Fu Ninja grips,
right,
to bar you from going up to the.
Yeah,
yeah.
That wasn't even on my thing,
right?
So I would hang out at the improv, and I would do the Sportsman's Lodge.
Me too.
You remember the Sportsman's Lodge?
Yeah, Jimmy and Joey show. Uh-huh. I did once.
It was the only place to get up on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah,
so I would do that.
Any rooms in Long Beach or?
Yeah, I would do some OC stuff.
Yeah.
Later on, there was this Dino Archie. He had this bowling alley show. I would do that. You would find these sweet
so many bowling alley
spots.
Shows.
Yeah.
And then the amazing part is that some would be really good. Like, they'd be really good shows with really attentive audiences. Like, and you got, it was, sometimes it was strange because you had to time your jokes along with some guy bowling. So, you like.
Well, with Jimmy and Joey, the bus would go by. So you'd be doing your jokes and you'd hear like a.
Like, well, if I have a NASCAR joke, this would be perfect right now.
did you have any shows along the way in those first few years before you moved up to LA? Did you have any shows where you were like, they were either A, discouraging or the opposite, that were just so, I mean, you strike me as somebody who has never had self-doubt about you, this being the right choice.
Yeah, I guess
so. But I mean, I think we all go through that where you have those nights or shows or you just, it just, you know, you want, we all want, especially starting out, like, to be so good so quick, and you want, you get to a point, I think, too early, where you're like, oh, I'm ready for this. Mm-hmm. I remember 3 years in being like, I can't believe I don't have a special. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, we all go through that, because it's natural, and you do, you have an idea of how long it takes, and all of a sudden, 3 years in, you're like, I'm crushing at these bar shows, so like, where's the next, how do I do this now?
Yeah.
So did you have any of that along the way, I guess? Or did you just understand the process of like, this is going to take some time?
I would pad out my week, make sure I had enough shows. You remember Ted, is it Ted Twyman or Bill Word? Bill Word had some stuff.
Okay.
I would do some stuff in OC. There'd be like 60 comics on the bill. It would go on forever.
Jesus.
I remember those
shows. You just have to get up. You just have to fill out your week. Some of them are bad. Some of them are good.
And
sometimes you find your nice little hidden gems.
And if you know you have a bad set, you're like, well, at least I fill out my week, so tomorrow I get to do this all over again.
Yeah.
You just try it again.
You just have, it's like reps. You just got to get up, good or bad. You're going to learn. It's a data point.
Yeah.
So I would do that. And every year I would just sort of check in with myself. Like, am I further along than I was the year before?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm on the right path. It's okay.
Did you have anybody along the way giving you any pointers? Like, I know for both of us, like Bobby Lee definitely like took
later
us.
Later on.
Yeah.
Once I got into the store.
So not till then.
A big help. Yeah. So not early on because I didn't know him until Chris introduced me. And I started coming around the Comedy Store only when Chris got passed because we became friends. We did the Jimmy and Joey show at the Sportsman's Lodge.
Chris was doing that too?
Yeah. Nice. Back in the day. And he liked my set and we were talking.
I don't know why he doesn't come up to that on stage.
What
he's always
mean?
Like undateable. In my Netflix
why did they bring
from
up
the
Jimmy
and Joey show?
Freaking Chris D'Elia, like, you know, remember your roots,
exactly.
Man.
That would have been great, by the way, if you shot your special there at the Sportsman's Lodge.
Uh-huh, just true to my roots. Everyone's trying to talk me out of it, and I'm like, I'm not a sellout.
You track down the bus that originally cockblocked all your punchlines.
Yeah, I want authenticity. I want the real bus line to keep.
The passengers that were on that bus.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up? Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Just having a nice glass of wine, thinking about life and how great it is. Yeah, I love wine. I'm sure you do too. It's the drink of the people, you know? Everybody loves wine, you know? But you know what I hate is going to the store to get wine. Because, you know, I don't know a lot about wine. Do I love it? Yeah. Do I like to go wine tasting? Yeah. Did I go wine tasting for a bachelor party last summer? Yeah. Was it weird? For sure. If you're like me and you love good wine, but you can't even spell sommelier, it's time to take the stress out of wine shopping and try Wink. W-I-N-C. Wink is an amazing wine delivery service. That's right, wine right to your door. These guys work directly with winemakers and growers from all over the world to create delicious wine and deliver it right to your door. That's right, Wink's 100% satisfaction guarantee means if you don't like a bottle of wine that they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle that you love. No questions asked. Look, I don't just get sent random wine bottles, okay? I personalize them. I go through their catalog and I pick out what I love. But Wink, they also personalize your wine membership and recommend wines specifically for you based on the results of your palate profile quiz. Say that 10 times fast so that they can really accommodate to what you love and what you love to taste. I rate all the wine that I receive from Wink so that they can learn about me with every order and constantly personalize the wine that they send me. If you sign up for Wink right now and get immediate insider access to the best fine wine from all over the world, you can find out about yourself, why yours truly, Adam Ray, and thousands of other satisfied wine lovers are raving about Wink. I use it. I love it. I love to get wine. You know, there's just so many things that are accessible now that can be brought to you. You don't have to leave your house for any reason. The best part, Wink is offering our listeners $20 off right now when you go to trywink.com/ALN. And guess what? They'll cover the shipping. Yeah, no shipping. Think about that. You'll get free wine personalized to your palate, delivered right to your door. So try Wink right now. Get $20 off and get complimentary free shipping right now when you go to trywink.com/ALN. That's trywink.com/ALN. All right? Start enjoying life and how it tastes. And now, enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray.
I want to know when did, like, were you always a dancer? Because, all right, if you watch the special.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot.
You got some moves,
special,
dude.
I'm like, there's a lot of dancing in this.
But there is, but it's
not
good. There, but it's good dancing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Like, okay, was that always something you were able to do?
Yeah. And first of all, let me preface by saying, I think it's good dancing for comedy. Because we're in the, for a comedian, I'm pretty good.
Okay.
But the bar's not crazy high for
no,
a comedy.
No, but also if I were to see you in a music video that involved a lot of like dancing or you got cast in that, I don't think we would be surprised to see it or you would be surprised to get it, right?
I guess.
You'd be like, yeah, cool, I can do this.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't know if you're going to back up like, you know, the Michael Jackson reunion tour.
Exactly.
But also maybe you are. Like, to me, you're incredible.
If I get to work and just stop doing stand-up, I'm dedicating too much time to these jokes.
Where does that even become an interest?
I've always, like, that's always been a thing. I've always told my people, like, I would love to be in a step-up film.
Oh, my God. I think you need to write some sort of parody of it.
Yeah. And,
like, I mean obviously, maybe Lance Can't Stop
Us. Yeah, the thing is almost a parody of itself, to be honest with you. But, yeah. So,
I know. There's so many of them.
So you would see, were step-up movies your influence? Or?
No, that came much later. I've just always been able to dance because when I was really young, I was into Michael Jackson.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I would record specials on VH1, and I would hit slow motion, rewind, and I would try to learn the Billie Jean routine. That was the first thing.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And so that's a good foundation for a dancer. To Michael Jackson, he's an amalgam of so many great styles. Yeah. And then it's just kind of evolved into, I got into breakdancing in high school.
Fuck,
I wasn't fantastic.
Same here.
Yeah. It was just so cool. I wanted to learn how to do all the power moves, like head spins.
I couldn't do that. I could do something very similar to a windmill. It just looked like I was having a weird seizure. But I could do,
it didn't help you were chewing a leather belt when you were
for an effect. I can do some move called the coffee grinder.
Yeah. That's like entry level breaking. Coffee grinder.
And then I can do the worm.
Uh-huh.
Now, quick question.
And that's about it.
In my middle school, was this middle school breakdancing? Yeah.
Yeah. Middle and high.
Yeah. Because we're all around the same age. So for me, 7th and 8th grade, there was a group of Asian breakdancers, and then there was a group that we called the Russian Mafia. Uh-huh. Where it was a guy named Pavel Shapovsky and Dimitri.
He already had a full beard.
A guy named Maxim something, but they were like the Russian breakdancers. And they would breakdance in the same area as Asian breakers were. And I remember one time the Russian breakdancers, I must have said something, because when I was playing basketball in the gym next door, and I came back, and the Russian Mafia had thrown my backpack in the toilet because I made fun of their breakdancing.
Hilarious.
So I came back, and I remember I had to go back. Sorry, this is a tangent, but I go back into class late because my backpack's just soaking wet. All my shit's wet. And I remember taking it out. And I remember as I'm walking out of the bathroom, I'm like, who the fuck did this? And I see Pavel Shapovsky halfway out the door, and he looks at me and just goes, that's what you get. And I was like, oh, shit. So I go to math late, and we had a substitute teacher. Her name was Mrs. Pastrang. Funny how you never forget this.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Pastrang, she had a lazy eye, and I walk in, and my fucking backpack's soaking wet, and she goes, well, 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 look who it is. What's your name? You know, she didn't even know my name.
She's trying to be badass. Yeah,
and draws a blank.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's your name? I was like, Adam Ray. She goes, where were you? I go, sorry, I'm late. The Russian Mafia threw my backpack in the toilet. She goes, I don't know what that means, but you're late. Anyway, so that was the breakdance situation. So I want to know, what group did you fall into?
Yeah.
Well, the thing
is, obviously Asian.
Well, we didn't really, there wasn't a lot of like black, or I guess there were some Asians, but there wasn't a rich breakdancing community at the schools I went to.
Yeah.
So it was a very small pool that I was in. It was me and maybe like Bingo, my buddy Bingo.
Nice.
I mean, with
he's a Filipino dude.
I mean, with a name like Bingo, yeah, I feel like you kind of have to do something like that.
Me and him were the only people who were into breakdancing, and we only had each other to learn off of, which isn't a huge pool.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks, because if any good breakdancer, there's, you have a lot of people to learn off of and kind of drive you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a culture and a community.
Yep.
And every school I've been to, it's always been me and somebody else. And we would just rent tapes from Mr. Rags or
club.
Yeah, we would or like Zoomies or Mr. Rags. You could buy these breakdancing Battle of the Years, which is like the breakdancing Olympics. So you would see crews from Korea. You would see crews. I remember it was Battle of the Year 98. This was this. I don't know if anybody else has the same, adoration for this tape as I do. But that was like the tape. It was yellow. Battle of the Year 98. Like Rocksteady Crew was on there from New York.
Nice.
Yeah, there's all these iconic dance. Now, Mr. Wiggles.
Dude, I'm going to pretend like I think that's cool.
Mr. Wiggles, he's so good at popping. He was a big
popper.
So
you were really learning from...
I was just learning from tape, from VHS. Yeah,
but that's the only way you could.
Yeah.
And then
later on, YouTube wasn't even out. There was this website called Style 2 Oof. And there was a French version of the page and a British version of the page.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then you could download these clips to
How often were you learning moves from the internet and taking them to the lunchroom?
Quite often. For breakdancing, a lot. Like, that's how I learned windmills and some popping stuff.
Yeah.
But then I just kind of gave up on it. And
yeah, because you don't think that's going to be a career, do you?
No, this is a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And then outside of... I never thought that I would have to revisit dancing again after high school, because... You would go to these dances.
Yeah,
it's
where,
fun to bust
where
out
you
then.
Dance.
Right.
And there'd be the little dance circles, and it's fun to be to have the whole school kind of look. You go, oh, Fahim's going to do the thing that he does. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they would always want me to do Billie Jean. Whenever Billie Jean came on, they would all try to assault
me. I mean, that's the greatest.
Yeah, but then you feel forced to put the monkey suit on, and maybe you don't want to.
Yeah,
it's fun
sure.
when you want to, but not when you're forced to.
Yeah. Like,
you
get
dance raped, and it's not fun. Ask me.
Dance rape sounds like a very serious line from a Step Up movie.
For sure.
Definitely one of the sequels.
I remember
you just got dance rape, bro.
Maybe it was 7th grade. I was at a dance, and then I hear the gongs from Beat It, like the bong.
Yeah.
And I just ran out of the
The cafeteria. Because everyone was going to go, oh,
yeah, yeah. I knew everyone was looking for me, so I just hid in the bushes for until the song was over. And then I came back. They're like, where were you? I'm like, oh, I don't know, man.
Why? Like, what happened? What's
up? Yeah, I was in the bathroom. What, what's going on? Oh, and then like act like you're disappointed. Oh, they played my song. I can't ask him to play it again. No, he said he would play it again for you. Shit.
Can't get out of it.
And there's no dance history in your family?
No, yeah,
like
no,
your father wasn't like an amazing break dancer. He's just hiding from you. If you found old tapes of him doing it,
I think it'd be so funny if his aversion to me doing stand up was because he was a dancer or like a comic, like a failed, and he doesn't want me to go through that.
Yeah, and then like his eventual acceptance of you is like he brings down his old Adidas tracksuit from the attic
and gives it to me.
Just like,
you're
ready now.
Yeah. What do they say the first time I saw you dance?
Probably I was doing it in the house. My mom would see it. It wasn't like, hey guys, come see my recital.
Right.
And I was never classically trained or anything, so there was never anything for them to. Yeah, they would never. Maybe they came to an assembly once. Maybe they came to a talent show one time. Or my mom. I forget.
So you think you're going to be done with it, and then when you get down
I'm working at Boeing. I don't think I'm going to be dancing ever again.
The first engineer / breakdancer.
And I'm not a big clubber either.
Right.
So it's so strange
to be
good.
Which is surprising, because you can. You're like the one guy that can actually do it.
It's a catch-22. People think, oh, man, you could dance. You must get all the ladies or whatever.
Yeah.
But then... Here's the thought process. Okay, I can dance. So what are my options? I go to the club by myself and just start dancing like a madman.
Pay the light guy $50 to put a spot on you at some point.
Yeah, so I'm just a guy dancing well by himself.
Yeah.
That's not appealing to a woman.
No woman looks at that like, he must have so much more behind that dancing.
Option number two, go with my buddy and me and him are dancing. Sure, it's good, but what's the dynamic there?
Well, all right. That, and because like, and then even if you go and then like talk to a woman and say like, hey, you want to go dance? And then she's like, yeah. And then you go and then you start doing like a routine. That's kind of weird as well.
I'm not going to do a routine or anything. I know how to organically dance, but that's a hard sell. Just, hey, random lady, want to dance? Like, she doesn't know that I can dance. So this being able to dance isn't able to help me yet.
Yeah.
And okay, here's option number three. It's very contrived.
Yeah.
The only way it would work is if I went to the club with like a gal pal who's wing woman, who's being a wing woman. I dance with her for a bit. Other chicks see that I'm a good dancer.
Yeah.
And now I'm not threatening.
Yep.
Like, oh no, that's just my friend.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
But look how, I mean, I don't want to live that
so
life.
Strategic.
Like, hey, Jackie, come on.
Yeah.
I need you to help me.
I need to help me get laid. I'll buy your drinks. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, that does sound like the plot line for a great movie about it. Maybe a step-up movie. The guy who's trying to get into it.
I got to do it myself. I got to stop waiting for them and try to plug me into these things. Make your own vehicle.
So where does Lance Cansopolis get created? Where does that... I mean...
This character, by the way, Lance Cansopolis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam told me about it. Uh-huh. I have not seen you do it before.
He's not been to the store enough to see
it
live on a night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is fun. Everyone needs to go to YouTube right now and watch the Lance Can't Stop Us documentary. It's only about 5 to 6 minutes long. It's not long, but
the documentary is like 15 minutes.
Yeah, the documentary is.
Oh, is it?
50,
yeah, 40.
All right, I saw something that was like 7 minutes or something. I don't know, but you have great cameos in it where it's Camille Nanjiani.
Yeah,
you have Marilyn Ryska, Bobby Lee, Chris D'Elia, and
Neil Brennan too.
Neil and. They're just talking about you like you're some mythical character, and you're this dude with like what has to be maybe 5 rat tails,
right?
And
just the luxurious mullet.
Yeah. What is so? Where do you? Because from Goatface, the sketch group, there was you, Asif Ali, Hasan Minhaj,
and Aristotle.
That definitely put it out there that you were like could like to do characters and stuff, right?
Because
you do that in
sketch. That's like, I love sketch, and like you love sketch too.
Yeah.
And just that's another, because I was doing sketch even before Goatface, but Goatface was sort of the evolution or just elevating what Oz already doing,
right?
Because I would do very do it yourself my videos on YouTube, which has a certain charm to it, but there was something that elevated it when you bring Aristotle's production value and artistic idea totally. As well.
And I think for both of us, like having an interest in that and then choosing stand-up that was such a solo endeavor, there's something really rewarding and beneficial to work collaboratively with people, not only in the writing, but the shooting, mm-hmm. and then like to put out quality stuff. And we both were doing it at a time when YouTube was becoming more prominent, and it was like, oh, what a great way to like, we don't have any credits, but like having
a
credit.
It was a great way to showcase.
Yeah.
It was a great, even if it doesn't have a ton of views, and we were fortunate to have some, have a lot of views, it's a great portfolio. And I still mm-hmm. think there's value in YouTube as serving as a portfolio. You don't need a billion views. You just need the, especially living in LA, you're fortunate enough to be associating with people who, the right people who can see it.
Right.
Like, something could have 400 views, but if three, you don't know where three of them work.
Right.
Yeah, and there's something to be said of just, oh, you're an actor? Do you have anything I could look at? And then rather than see you play a part that you don't necessarily...
Yeah, you have a lot of control, and it's still your point of view.
Yeah, like, because, I mean, yeah, some casting executive could watch you play the part that you played in Californication, the part of young Hollywood douchebag.
Number two.
Number two, true. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, which is an actual role. I looked up your IMDb. You
know, I got a check for 94 cents today for that.
So who says being a young Hollywood douchebag doesn't pay?
We're going out.
Yeah. But, like, if you do that, that's one little instance, but then when you do a sketch, like, okay, there's something... Here's what I can do.
It's more tailored for you.
And yeah.
Young Hollywood douchebag number two, I'm serving a role. I'm just plugging a hole. But when I do a sketch, it shows many facets of what I do. The writing, the acting, and it's more in line with what my gear is.
Yeah, so, creating a character that's not just some archetype that someone else created.
But, and it's catered to you because you wrote it.
Mm-hmm. So did you say, I want to do a video where I dance at some point, and then the character came, or...
The way it happened was, I think Aristotle, because he was living next to me in K-Town. I'm still there.
Yep.
But we were next door neighbors, and we'd always hang out, and we always had great rapport, just bouncing ideas. And we had this idea of, I always thought it'd be very funny for this character to have an amalgam of every 80s archetype, like Swayze, Van Damme.
Right.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon, just all of them lumped into one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how Lance visually came to be. Mm-hmm. And so we did that for that sketch Dirty Breakin' with Melissa Villaseñor, who was not on SNL at the time.
Yeah.
It's so funny, these videos back in the day, to see who's doing what
now. Come on. Yeah.
Right.
So that was sort of like a, just lampooning those 80s breakdancing movies where there's a girl who's classically trained and there's a guy from the streets who's like, you don't know real dancing.
He always has to take her there. Like, this is where you really dance.
So that was the whole premise of the sketch, Dirty so Breakin'. Absurd. It starts with Melissa classically dancing in this dance studio, and then I'm watching her in a doorway. Like, she does a spin and she sees me that I've been watching the whole time.
Yeah, so beautifully shot too.
Yeah, it looks so good. And then I'm just kind of like, you could tell that there's some tension there, and I'm like, this isn't real dancing. I'll show you real dancing. And then we go to the streets.
Yeah.
And then there's Leonard Robinson.
Yeah.
And then like Keetra Long, and I forgot the other guy's name, but there's three African Americans dancing, and we're because I always hated that voyeuristic, or we're just popping in for a bit to watch the black kids dance.
Yeah.
And it's like a zoo in these dancing movies.
Yeah.
Like they just go to the hood, watch them dance, learn how to dance, and then they're back in their white world.
Yeah.
Right. No. And then just leave them like, oh no. And by the way, they just go to that corner. They're like, oh, are they just dancing here all the time?
I thought it was so shitty.
It's
like,
what they
come
do
with me. I'm going to show you the black kids dance. and then you leave that, and it's back to this white movie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's me and Melissa. We're watching them, and we're all into it.
Yeah.
Like we're learning all these moves, and then I get into it. Like, this is a big fun time.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
they're dancing, and then they pull me into the circle, and then I start dancing. And then at the end of it, the music cuts out, and Leonard's like, oh man, that was great. And I'm like, oh, take my wallet. Yeah. like it turns out the whole time.
Which is such a great...
Like, he's just scared of black people.
Oh, yeah.
But visually, that's how Lance existed. So
yeah, so denim jeans, wife beater, and that mullety, beautiful, I guess, Swayze hair, right?
Yeah, I would say Van Damme hard target is kind of more...
It's really, I mean, and I love that you start with the visual of it, because like that is... Because
that's how it started.
Yeah.
And there was no accent. It was just me being this dancing guy from the 80s. And So
the video did well, I remember.
Yeah, it did pretty well. Yeah. And it's still one of my favorites. Yeah. It's so
then,
beautiful.
Yeah, and then when did you think to bring that character onto the stage?
It was all by accident. So I think some weeks or months went by, and then Willie Hunter was doing the Willie Hunter show in the main room at the Comedy Store. And he hit me up. He was like, hey, can you dance for like our musical guest or a musical number? And I'm like, that'd be weird if I just had Fahim Anwar dance on stage. It'd be very strange.
Yeah. Yes.
And then I knew I had Lance in my back pocket, but it wasn't even, he didn't have a name. I go, I'll dress up and do it. He goes, okay, what should I call this guy? And then just on the spot, I was like, Lance, because it rhymes with dance in my head. And then Can't Stopolis. Like, he can't stop, you know? So Lance Can't Stopolis puts it on the flyer. Night of the show comes. I'm doing a dance number to Chromeo's Night by Night. It's a funny thing. Yeah. Dan Madonia's the guitar guy. Yeah. We have, I think, Scordis, Leaf Blower, just the wind. And it's just a comedic dance number for 2 minutes. I'm done with it. And then I'm floating around in the hallways after the show, and open mic's going on. And one of the door guys is like, hey, we need people. Do you want to go on? And there's maybe 7 people in the audience in the OR. And I go, sure. And I'm still dressed like this. So I go on and I make a decision. I gotta have an accent, otherwise it makes no sense.
Yep, right.
So I'm like, you know, hey, what's up? Like, how are you doing? And there's like 3 cougars at one table. Yeah. And I'm just kind of fucking around. But it's getting this type of laugh that is so different than any laugh that I... Not that it's better, it's just a different...
Well, it's because they know you're playing a character.
No, some don't. They think,
really?
That, yeah,
oh, yeah,
there's
dude.
A lot
oh,
of
wow.
people think is a real dude.
Yeah. Well, because your accent is so, like, it's not overly character, and your delivery is still very...
And I'm not doing canned jokes.
Grounded. No.
Yeah. You're doing, like, real stand-up.
And crowd work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's mostly just being a living, breathing person. Yep. There's not a lot of canned stuff, and that's why people, I think, they think he's a real dude.
Yeah.
Is because it's a very interactive thing.
And also it's like the everything looks so real. Like, it's not like you have some big jokey goatee on that.
Yeah.
Like, nothing about visually looks.
And there's nothing big about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, I may look ridiculous or whatever, but it's very grounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. To the point where someone would actually, like we say, you drive the streets of Los Angeles and weird things suddenly look normal.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, a guy with 5 rat tails and a mullet.
And they would think that if it were fake, like, he would have broken by a certain time or done some sort of like tongue-in-cheek thing, which never happened.
Yep.
So part of them are like, oh, fuck, this guy's for real. Like, I thought. So it was just getting a different type of laugh, and it did way better than it should have at that hour because it was so late at night.
Right.
And it planted the seed. I'm like, I've got to cultivate this a little bit. And it took a while to get the courage and confidence to bring it out more often. Like, I did it 4 months later and then very sporadically. But in the last year or two, I've been doing it. I've been trying
and
to
then
do it
people,
almost every
and
week.
I know, like, Chris D'Elia and some other people would be in the back, and they would start, like, feeding
lobbing
you.
Because that's the goal of the Choo Choo Train, just questions. Like, asking Lance questions.
And that's helping you build the character, too, right?
Yeah, and it's just, it's freeing, too. Because when I do me, I've got to, all right, what bits do I want to do? What am I working on? But with Lance, all I got to do is show up.
And let him drive.
Yeah, so long as they want to play, the audience has to play.
So you're improvising everything.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, you are really quick, and when I see you do crowd work as Fahim, it's always great. But, like...
But Lance is even more, because when it's me, I'm still doing that math in my head of, like, all right,
I'm going to get back to here.
Yeah, do I get back to the thing, or do I... There's always this tug of war.
And there's
but with this, it's just like...
Yeah, and there's probably something else. When you're yourself, there's something a little more at risk where they go, if they don't like me, they don't like me.
Yeah.
They don't like me personally. Uh-huh. So I kind of have to be good. But if you're Lance Cantopoulos, who gives a shit?
Because it runs the gamut. Sometimes there have been the highest of the highs, just explosions of Lance shows. And then there's other ones that are kind of whatever. And I'll think that it wasn't very good, but it's just so different for some of the audience members. They're like, that was fantastic.
Yeah,
right.
But in my head, I'm like, oh, man, I know where the bar could be.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any, and we've talked about this briefly, but like, do you have any bigger aspirations with...
With Lance?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's great potential for Lance to have a bigger thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to find out what that thing... I mean, we're trying to pitch a Lance show right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be great.
It's really... I mean, to see... I also love about it, too, is that... And it's, you know... I've started bringing, you know, Avery Pearson on the road with me to do, like, some music stuff. And what I love when I saw you doing that is just, like... finding like just with the dance stuff and just the character stuff, it's like the stage, and Hasan is now doing this beautifully, this one man show. It's like being a comic and being on stage, it's like there's no funny is our job. There are no rules.
It's a blank canvas.
You can get so locked into like, it's all gotta be jokes and stand up. I mean, even at the end of your special, I won't even say what happens, but there's a couple great things that happen that I'm just like, it's so like, yeah, man, you can do whatever the fuck you want. And it was so beautiful and silly and fun. And it was like, so when I saw you doing that, you know, along the lines of like me going, fuck, man, I had this big part of my life where music was a part of it and singing lessons and musicals and whatever. And it was like, how can I incorporate that without just being like a straight up, now I'm this guy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because like, you know, when I first started, I would fucking off the guitar, but I was like, you're the guitar guy or you're not. And, anyway, so to see you like incorporate that and find
it's beautiful when you get to incorporate things that are a part of your being, and it just adds more colors to your performance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
and when you sing, you're like, oh fuck, he's got a voice, or this is and it's different than what they've been seeing all night.
Right.
Well, yeah, and I mean, was Steve Martin, your dad's favorite comedian, who said you will use everything you've ever learned. Where he knew rope tricks, and he ended up using that when he was in the Three Amigos. Like, he ended up doing rope tricks.
Yeah.
He's like, why the fuck? Like, when would I ever like? Which scares me because I know how to tap dance, so I know that at some point.
Gonna use it.
I'm going to learn it. I'm going to have to use it at some point.
Well, you've kind of, when you used to close with your lap dance, I mean, that's a form of you using that skill.
Yeah, but like not putting taps on my shoes, but I can do that. So now and now I'm thinking like, should I force it? Should I try to like just go on stage and say like, okay, now it's time for the tap number? I have no idea.
I think it'll just happen because I never thought that any of this thing, the dancing and all that, would culminate into Lance and some of the other stuff. It's kind of organic and fun the way it happens.
I do want to know, we have about 10 minutes left, and I want to put a the Saudi Prince. You performed for a Saudi Prince at one point.
Did I tell you? How do you know that?
Brad wrote that down.
I know that story.
Really? How do you know that story?
I know that story from Raj.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he told it to me, and I was like, oh, God, that's the craziest gig.
But I bounced. I didn't.
Oh, okay, you didn't stay the whole thing?
I mean, I was there for so many hours. At a certain point, I'm like, I'm not going to be beholden to this Saudi prince. But it was the most bizarre show.
How do you even get that call or that gig?
I think who did it? Oh fuck!
No.
Maybe it was Abby Roberge.
Yeah,
I think. Well, I think some Saudi prince. He was working the door at the comedy store, and some guy who worked with a Saudi person was like, "We need comics or whatever." And then he's like, "All right." In his head, he's like, "I'll handle it. I'll skim a little off the top, or I'll organize this thing." So then he hit up other people. He hit me up. Some other comics as well. And I think Chris Burns was involved too. So I'm like, alright, yeah, I'm gonna perform for some Saudi prince. And it was at the Four Seasons, was it? Or Beverly Hilton,
like,
Beverly
Hilton, some crazy hotel.
But then also they hit up Tehran separately. So Tehran was getting so much money. Like, it was frustrating when I found out like how much money he was getting and then how much I was getting.
Hey, bathrobes are expensive.
Yeah. So I think Tehran and some other people were there too.
And
his prince was just
but the story I heard is that like when you hear a performance for the Saudi prince, you're like, oh, this is gonna be a big thing and like a big ballroom with lots of people, and it was like 10 people or something.
Every Saudi prince story I hear is just some depraved thing, or it's like absurd. Like it's never like you're performing for the president, and it's like the Saudi prince wants to do a show in his living room and that's almost what it was like. I mean, it was a big ballroom, but hardly any people were in it. He was just sitting in a chair and
with people around him, like fanning him.
No fanning, but there was a group of women, like the women sat together and like we weren't allowed to like look at the women.
Oh, God.
Yeah, all these there was all these ground rules.
Like what were the ground rules?
That was one of them. Just like, don't look over at that table.
Don't make me laugh.
Yeah. And then don't make fun of like any political stuff, or don't make
like
any terrorist jokes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Or like beheading stuff.
Did you ever get him to laugh?
Well, I didn't do it because I was waiting around forever.
Oh.
Because I think Tehran went up. Mm-hmm. And then there was no natural flow of the show. It was just whatever the prince wanted. So he's like, no, keep going. Keep. And like, so the Perron's
prince,
up there.
So the prince is the light. So if like, yeah. you're, so like you're doing well, he's so like, don't stop.
Once I realized there was no rhyme or reason or organization to this thing, and we're just at the whim of this dude, I go, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I still got like paid a little bit of money, not as much as the other guys because I left.
Yeah,
but I—it was just so absurd.
But I mean, you see that world and you go, "That's an insane world where literally
there was a dude.
Anything you want, you get instantly."
Yeah, yeah. I have this idea for a sketch called Saudi House, where a bunch of like 10 Americans are in a mansion, and there's one Saudi prince, and they all think that they have wills of steel.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has their price. So the Saudi prince will like tell them to do ridiculous things, and they'll say no until it gets to a number where they'll do it. You know, he'll be like, you have gay sex. And they go, no, I'm not gonna do it. And then he just keeps on throwing money at
them.
And all these people are shells of human beings afterwards. It's called Saudi House.
I mean,
yeah.
There was a dude who just travels with the prince. This white dude who I met there, who just plays tennis with the prince. He gets paid. That's his job.
To just play tennis with him.
To just play tennis and go around the world. It's like a pet. It's so weird. You get paid to be the prince's pet.
That's so weird.
I want to ask two more things. The whole process of the special I want to close on. But I want to know, people definitely flock to watch you on stage, right?
I know. I mean, if you say
it. Right. I say it because it's real.
They come from miles around.
Because I think there's this balance that you have that's really appealing. That's like, you know, the silliness of just like making people laugh that you're really good at. You just innately have. But then like you're a really good writer and you're observational, personal. It's just for me, I you're one of the few people that I see. And I'm like, I want to know like your process, because it seems like. You've gotten to a point to where you've just figured out how to write jokes for you really well. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, when you hear a topic or a news story, or you think about something that strikes you as like out of the ordinary, or something that you have an opinion on that you could bring to the stage, it seems like the joke, whether it comes right away or a week in, you kind of know what you want to say and you know the beats of it.
That's pretty good.
Do you go to coffee shops? Do you just write on napkins? Does something happen? Like, you're straight out of Compton bit, which is so great. And I remember seeing that in the clubs and be like, oh, that's going to crush when you do that on. I was like, you can't do that on late night TV. But like, right. But it's such a great bit. And the observations of it, and then the act outs and the voices you do. And then there's, you know.
You're very accurate impressions of a pigeon.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, what comes first, I guess, I want to know.
I guess, I just...
Like with that bit.
With which one?
This, Straight Outta Compton.
I guess I saw the movie.
Right.
And then I saw, of course, there's a lot of African-Americans there, too. And then there's also, like, some thugs there as well. They're just, like, some harder-looking.
Yeah.
They're just so PC. I don't know what the right thing to say is. They're just harder-looking, like, black guys. So, and that's a very emotional scene. And I just thought it was so funny, like... these guys to go in and be like, yo, we're gonna see Straight Outta Compton, and then to be crying or like to get misty-eyed to be a gangster and see that scene, and because it sneaks up on you.
Yeah, well, that and it's like we were talking about earlier with like the people dressed weird doing daily things. It's like when you're a gangster, you have to be a gangster like
all the time.
And now all of a sudden you're watching
NWA Straight Outta Compton,
right?
And you've got a tear teetering on your lower lip.
Yeah, and not the tattoo from when you kill someone, but like an actual tear.
Yeah, and you're with your homeboys.
Yeah, you're like,
you can't.
Hey, man, I mean, like, I thought it was good.
Yeah, so it started with that. That kind of got my mind thinking about the Eazy-E death scene.
Right.
And then the wheels were spinning, like, oh, yeah, it is a period piece. And then it did strike me that he just said faggot so openly.
Yeah.
And then it's so jarring in 2016 when we saw it. But at the time, you realize, and that's kind of how it got the wheel spinning in my head about the bit.
Now, as soon as you hear, like, and that's, I think, probably safe for how a lot of people operate. They hear that resonated with you in the moment.
Yes.
And afterwards, too, so much that you're like, all right, well, I'm still thinking about this. What is it about that? Now you start asking questions, right? Like,
yeah, I think the longer I've been doing stand-up is that I recognize kernels of ideas very quickly, and I'll jot them down in my phone. Just enough words to capture whatever the original thought is. And my mind's already naturally marinating on the idea, so maybe there are new branches of this thought. So that's kind of what it is. I'm catching butterflies with a net.
Yeah.
With my comedy now.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the day, I would sit down and I would write like a monologue almost, and you're very wooden.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while to find what your method is and your process. But now it's to the point where I write. I have Evernote. It's synced to my laptop and my phone. So what I do on my phone goes to Evernote on my laptop.
Oh,
what
great.
I do on my laptop, it goes to my.
You have to have that.
Yeah, it's a valuable tool.
So I just jot the things down on my phone and just a few words to not lose the idea.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would say that you've done really well and just seeing you like grow over the years, and I know this probably segued into the putting the special together, which I want you to talk about, because that whole situation in itself is crazy.
Yeah.
But like, is that, and I think we all strive to do this, is like constantly asking questions and like not just, and I, you know, I try to push myself on this all the time, because I'll do something and I'll have one joke about something and then I'll just leave it. And I'm like, God, you got to ask more questions. You got to keep peeling back. Like, what, if you think that, then what else? You know, just so you can really ring you know, and you did that a lot in the special, where there's things and you would say something and I was like, oh, that's really funny, and then it would go another level and I was like, oh shit, I didn't even think about that, but you did, and that's why you have a special.
My process, I don't naturally, sometimes I'm lucky enough that there's a topic and I think about it and it beats out and I have a bit that's 2 or 3 minutes long,
right.
And that's great. But then some of these things that you're saying, like you'll have one joke and it's just kind of a throwaway, there are plenty of those that I have floating around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really have no home for them. But as you live life, something else will happen. You'll have another idea.
Attach it to it.
I think of jokes as like Lego pieces.
Yeah.
Colored Lego pieces. So I might have...
They prefer African-American Lego pieces.
Sorry.
Kind of fucked
Brad
up.
Brad Williams coming in.
So sniper.
African-American Lego pieces. No. Yeah. Well, they're all sorts of colors, right? Blue.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We're just getting into my autism. So they're different colored Lego pieces.
Yeah.
And if I just have one piece, it's not enough for a set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you can't
so
build
it's just
something
floating around.
That.
It's a great joke, but it has no home because it'll take you off the flow of whatever I'm doing for the set.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just orbiting. But maybe, you know, a few months later or a month or whatever, a year, I have some other idea. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of similar to this thing. I can just attach these Lego pieces. Once I have enough Lego pieces, this is a bit. Now I have a nice little chunk. Mm-hmm. And that's worthy of putting in a set or a special. So that's kind of how I think. Like these one-offs, sure, it'd be great if it were more, because we always want more, but there's still value in it.
Yeah,
and you never know when they're going to come back.
Yeah.
You never know when you're going to be able to attach them, like you say, onto something else.
Yeah, it's sort of like you're putting it in the piggy bank for later.
All right, so this, Brad, I don't know if you know how his special came together. You posted a really nice long thing about
it
on Facebook,
man.
Which...
And I just wanted to be real. It wasn't like a light grab or anything.
No, you could tell it wasn't. And it's also like, look, when you can recognize that you have put in the work and you're somebody that people respect and enjoy seeing and root for, you almost have a responsibility in some regards, I feel, to make things like that, because there's a lot of people that look up to you, and the same way a lot of young comics listen to our podcast, which is why I love to especially hear like on the writing process and things like that to dive into, because it does help. And like when you see stuff like that, even for people that are, you know, even I saw like again, I mentioned his name, Chris Leah. We've said it 3 times. He should have showed up by now. I know the Beatles thing works for him.
We need way more coffee.
Way more coffee and way more I don't know,
weird 80s baseball references.
No, Jordans. That's new.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's,
you go.
Yeah, that would Jordans. Ruin, man. Yeah, if you were trying to attract Chris to a house, you'd leave a trail of Jordans.
Just iced coffees and Jordan.
But you commented something really nice about it. So it was like cool to see, like, even at that level, Chris was like, fuck, man, a lot of just appreciation for the mm-hmm. journey, because it was very much, and I don't know if it's still on your Facebook page.
Yeah, it's still there. And I think I posted on Instagram
just
the whole journey of getting the special.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and just everything, and hearing your story even today, it's just like, and times 10, though, of just everything, all the hours and everything you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for listeners and for Brad, so it came together because what?
So basically, I mean, I've been trying to, I guess it all started, every comic, I think the first benchmark, or they want the half hour, the Comedy Central half hour.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it means less now than it did for us back in the day, because it's so interesting. Back in the day, there was a blueprint to do what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And like Premium Blend was part of it.
Right.
Or like Live at Gotham. And then it was a half hour.
Got the half hours.
A half hour
and
on Comedy
the
Central.
Legendary half hours when you talk about Dane Cook's.
Yeah.
Frank Caliendo's. Like half hours. Yeah. Swartzen's. Like half hours that
were
launched
huge
careers.
Springboards. Yeah. So that was the blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have this affinity for the half hour. So I've been I think I applied to that, or I submitted maybe 6 or 7, maybe 8 years. So just year after year, yeah. I would submit half hour, like a different half hour every year. And then I would get rejected. And I'm like, all right, that sucks. But I kind of understand. Like, I still have a business mind as well. I go, okay, maybe I'm funny, but I don't have the credits that some of these other guys. Because sometimes when the year, when the list comes out for the year, you see the people who get them. You're like, oh, they got a lot of shit going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So the last year I submitted, I was in New Mexico, maybe this is 2 years ago, filming Whiskey Tango Foxtrot with Tina Fey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which was amazing, yeah?
Yeah, that was a great little experience. And so I was out there filming that. I had done a season of Guy Code. I had done Late Night with Seth Meyers. Mm-hmm. A good set on there.
Yeah, it was so great.
Maybe there's some other thing, too, I'm leaving out.
Conan or Carson Daly?
No, I think that came later. Mm-hmm. But those things are substantial things. And yep. I thought, all right, with this, the movie, and those things that I've done, and this submission, I should probably get it this year. And then I didn't get it. And I'm like, all right, then this just isn't going to happen. Because I've in my mind, I'm like, I've checked all the boxes.
Yeah.
So
and you've shown them progression. I think that's one thing that I would take as some comfort, where I was like, all right, well, they want to see the improvement from year to year. And so,
yeah.
So if you don't get it this year, then show them that you're going
to
be even better.
But it's also refreshing just to know, oh, there's no more I can do.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I can stop banging my head. I can stop with this.
Yeah.
So I stopped submitting. And honestly, the year I submitted, where I didn't get it, this last time when I was in New Mexico, I didn't even really want it that I had an hour. I was trying to unload.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, I'm like, all right, let's try to do an hour. And I was trying to hit up some places to do an hour, and nowhere was really biting. So I was like, am I going to do this on my own? I was going to do it on my own. And then in my mind, I had this epiphany. I was like, all right, they're saying no to the idea of me doing an hour. They don't even know what the hour is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're saying no to this.
They're saying their ideas not, they've put together of what Fahim
yes,
Anwar
yes,
is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm having to count on their perception. I go, why don't I at least put something in front of their face to say no to? And then I'd be fine with that.
It could have been one guy who was like, you mean the guy from Chuck? He ain't funny. Like,
yeah, you joke, but yeah. I mean, that's how it is in this town. Sometimes it could be as arbitrary as that. So I had a headlining weekend in La Jolla, the La Jolla Comedy Store. 4 shows, you know, 2 Friday, 2 Saturday. I was like, let me tape that. So I had a buddy come down. We had two cameras. We just went into the soundboard for good audio.
Yep.
And I just wanted to tape a nice little proof of concept of what the hour is. So I had a thing. We cut it together, and we just sent it around. Like, hey, this is the hour that I want to do. And then CISO was interested, or Comedy Dynamics and CISO, and they wanted to do it. So that's how it came to be. You just have to put it in front of them. This town lacks imagination. So.
Yeah, they have a perception of you, or what they think you're going to be. I mean, hell, they can go down your IMDb page and see young Hollywood douchebag number 2 and be like, well,
there's no way that guy's getting a special.
Yeah, I don't want a young Hollywood douchebag to be on my television for an hour. So, like, yeah. You don't know. You're not necessarily in control of their perception of you. And so the fact that you did that showed great outside level of awareness, where you go, oh, I need them to see this to know what I can do,
and it would be closure for me. Even if they didn't like it, I would be content with that.
Well, now they're saying no to the actual material and the act, and not just you as
the
as an archetype. And
that was a big epiphany, and that was a good realization.
And how was the experience of shooting it? And I'll say too, just knowing you and seeing you so much, like, I feel like you captured you.
That's perfectly. I'm so glad that you said that, man, because that's all you can ask for in a special, because I don't know how it's going to do when it comes out.
Sure.
But as a stand-up, all you can hope for is that when you tape a special, that it captures what you do night in and night out.
Yeah, what your live show is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about this special.
You should, yeah.
Yeah. Shot at the Alex Theater. That's where I shot my second special. Yeah. And it's a great theater, great sound. You got great audience shots and stuff like that.
The sound was great. Like, for both of you guys' specials, it really, like... I like that it's seeing the audience, but like not a ton of, I can't remember how many, it cut to the crowd a few times, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But not
overly.
Yeah, and also, but there was enough shots of the crowd from either behind you or whatever. And I really enjoyed that. I was like, oh, cool. Like, not having the end of the punchline cutting to a person, letting it stay on you and let me decide how I'm going to laugh.
Yeah.
How was the whole experience, though? I mean, was it like, did you cry?
No, I didn't cry. Should I have? Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I did for my first one.
No, you know, when I was writing that post, I got a little emotional because I had perspective on it all.
Yeah, and then you're kind of putting it all in front of you and you're kind of reliving the whole situation.
Yeah, because I put that behind me. But when you culminate, when you're writing this post and you're reliving all the work it took to get to this point, yeah, that's probably when I got a little emotional.
Did it feel like, and I guess I ask for people listening, but also for myself, who will hopefully do one soon, but like what... the prep, like when you went into you did two shows, right?
I did two shows.
Did you, I mean, nerves? Were you just so like, oh, I know this hour, I did it, it's what I submitted, like, now just have fun? Or did you let like the cameras and the special production get in the way of anything?
No, like I made sure to have a few weekends set up before I did the special.
Yeah.
So I did the road, I did like South Dakota. I did some weird places that probably weren't the best for, because it was just like all white.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of my bits did not go over well in South Dakota.
Well, that, and I want to say that for having the name Fahim Anwar, you may think there's a certain type of comedy or certain types of things that you're going to talk about. And I don't know if this is a conscious effort on your part, but you really just, like, you walk on and you just start doing observational jokes. You don't go like, hello, my name is Fahim. It is so hot to fly. Like that's not what you're doing.
I'm glad that is apparent to you.
Very, because I mean, as someone that has something that stands out, that you're not your average white guy, that
a weird beard.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Very, very strange beard. Kind of patchy.
By the way, weird beard is playing at the Troubadour in front.
Oh, they're
terrible.
They're awful. They're weird. Anyway, but like,
yeah, it's great you didn't come out and do that.
Yeah.
You could have.
Well, I guess, but that's not really...
That's not you.
Yeah. And again, just capturing what I already do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've always been very aware of with my comedies. I was born in Everett, Washington. I'm very American. My parents are from Afghanistan. It's a part of me, but it doesn't define me.
No.
And I do have insight into that world, and I'll do that later. And if I want to, I just want to do whatever I think is funny.
Yeah. And so, and that's not who you are. So if you had come out there and done something along those lines, it
would have been so disingenuous.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been authentic. I mean, that's the thing about stand-up that I really want to stress to people that want to try it, or if they, because a lot of times when comics start off, they're starting and they're just saying what they think people think is funny. And they're doing that, like, oh, well, they like when Chris Rock does this, so I'll do that. Mm-hmm. And maybe you have to do that because you're a blank slate and you have nothing yet, but they're going to laugh at stuff that is true to you. If you believe it and you're actually that person, if it's an authentic observation to you, then they will find the humor.
Yeah.
Your audience will find that.
I always say the jump-off point is write what you think is funny, what makes you laugh, and then try it out. And hopefully it makes the audience laugh.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, retool it.
Right.
If it still doesn't work, chuck it.
I mean, but
always start with what makes you laugh.
Yeah, because it makes you laugh, so you know it's funny.
Yeah.
It makes you laugh.
Well, makes you original, because it's the starting point is what makes you laugh. You never want to start with what you think people want to hear.
No.
Have you already started thinking about hour two, or is that like...
Yeah, just because I've had this hour for a while, so a lot of that I've just had that plate spinning and looking for a place to bury it.
Yeah,
and I finally found it. And even leading up to it, I had some other bits that I'm doing that didn't quite fit for this special. And I have some bits that I'm working on for hour two. I'm not there yet, but
are you gonna try to make it more themed or just talk about stuff that you didn't talk about before? Or
I've found that kind of what I'm talking about now, it's a little darker.
Definitely covered everything in yours as far as observational, family stuff, dating.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of autobiographical.
For sure.
And there is that silly stuff.
Because I'm trying to like be cognizant of that, and you know, looking at both you guys' specials, like what, you know, the first one you put out, you want it to be, you know, just so much like we were saying, like capturing you and what you're doing now. But then it's like, yeah, when, in a second one, you want to maybe talk about different stuff so that people, you know, can still get, be like, oh, cool, I'm coming back for the same vibe, but hopefully different context.
I think it's more observational.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of observation in this last one, but there was also some stuff about my parents and family. And yeah, I think this one, just observation will always be there.
And you say dark. How dark?
But it's always silly. I'm not a bad guy, or I'm not mean spirited.
So it's gonna be like 9 minutes of like, if I were to kill myself. Like,
no. And it'll always be
it'd be in a step up movie. Yeah, but like really, I do it.
But like a dark step up movie. It's a they're
fun,
bad dancers.
It's fun, Dark. Like, I shouldn't be laughing at this, but we still have a good time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't tell our listeners enough. Go to CISO. I think they'll give you a free trial or something, won't they?
Yeah, we're pushing it pretty soon because it's coming out. And I'll have a promo code. So yeah. I think they'll be able to get a month for free.
Yeah, this will be out the week before. Wait, March 9th is a
Thursday, I believe.
Right. Yeah. So this will go out on that Monday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So it's Monday right now.
Well, we need time travel.
So yeah, go and look it up on March 9th. There's no business like show business. It's on CISO, and I'll tell you right as the special starts off, it's already different.
Don't blow the surprise.
I won't tell you what it is, but there's something where you're like, oh, I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, that was a cognizant move. Yeah,
of like, yeah, that was Aristotle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
that was cool.
But it definitely does make you immediately, because you know, how do you separate yourself other than, you know, look and material? You're like, I want to do, and I love that. Even at the ending too, I won't say what happens, but like, you definitely, you know, it's again like capturing everything, the sketch part of you, and the surprises and the misdirection. And also, look, if you just like to laugh a lot and discover new comics, fucking watch it, because it's comedy's in such a great place right now, and there's so many, and it's like, it's so funny to, I mean, you know, I'll have conversations with people that are just like, do you know this guy Sebastian Maniscalco?
He's like the biggest thing right
I
now.
Mean it, but again, it's like there's so much that it's like
people are still discovering.
Yeah.
And I'm anxious for our listeners to, if they don't already know you, to discover your work and know that you're not just the guy from Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Who fucks donkeys.
Wait, was that your yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Is that really?
Yeah, they never show. No, I watch donkey porn. I don't fuck donkeys.
Yeah.
I live vicariously.
Was that in the character research that you did? You were like, look, this guy,
yeah, I went to a lot of farms.
I went down to Mexico, saw the donkey show, took very copious notes. They're like, why do you have a notepad in the audience of the donkey show? It's research.
Method.
Yeah,
you know, though, it's one of those things that's so crazy, but like, if you did end up seeing, like, let's say, hypothetically, you were in a position where you're on the road and somebody said, Fiend, you want to go see this donkey show? Like, in the back of your head, would you go, oh, man, there might be some material there? Or would you go, nah, I can't because
that's too far. As a comic, I've sort of expanded my horizons, but I couldn't.
Really?
I don't think I could.
So you were that good of an actor? Because I was convinced that you were really into donkey porn.
Well, Brad's seen donkey shows, and he's like, I know if this guy's seen one or not.
Yeah. I like, trust me, I would be able to spot you if you were faking it. If you were not a real donkey show a connoisseur,
right? Just acting, man.
You're on Twitter and Instagram.
Twitter, Instagram, yeah.
At Fee Manoir,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fee Manoir.
Do you tweet a lot?
I tweet. I love Twitter.
You do?
Yeah, I love Twitter. I know it's dying and there's not a lot of growth, but I'm old school, man.
Because you love the
I just like
short amount of time
jokes.
To get
I think of Twitter as sort of comedian B sides or mixtapes.
Nice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
cause like,
deep cuts
for the streets.
Yeah. hey, spot. Man, I don't know how you white kids tweet out of the neighborhood, but you got to learn to tweet from the streets, man.
Sometimes I'll be about to tweet something and I'm like, no, this is too good. I got to save this for the stage.
You do both. You are both two of the people I know most that use Facebook and Twitter for like jokes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is pretty great. And I wish I had that sort of discipline and just my brain work that way.
I feel like these jokes or thoughts I have are too fleeting or dumb to do on stage.
Sure.
But the forum of Twitter is perfect for it.
Well, because it's just instant.
Yeah.
And now people read Twitter along with watching TV shows. So when you have something like the Oscars, which recently happened, you can just, that moment, you can be like, okay, joke about that thing right now, where in 2 weeks, no one gives a fuck, but right now.
Yeah, it's very disposable. It's very low stakes and very disposable, but there's some upside too.
Like here you put, Kyrie plays in Cleveland because New York and LA are too close to the edge. Yeah. That's hilarious. And that's after Kyrie came out and said the earth is not flat. Or no, that is flat.
He says the earth is flat.
And then also I read today that SpaceX is going to do like, they're going to have two people for orbit around the moon for like space tourism.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
I wanted to tweet like it should be Kyrie and B.O.B.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing, though? Like, when you see things like that, that people say,
yeah,
you're just like, oh, fuck. I mean,
I had no idea this whole time watching you play basketball.
Yeah, you thought the earth was stupid.
Like, I feel like I could never watch him play basketball again. Like, not like, but like the same way.
Uh-huh.
Like, now I'm always going to be thinking, Like, you think the earth is flat.
This odd factoid about the person changes your perception now.
You also posted this amazing thing, this picture of CeeLo Green at the Grammys in that fucking...
He looks like an Oscar.
Yeah. But wishing CeeLo Green a speedy recovery. It's just such a great, like, quick, like, yeah, dude, like, what is going on in your brain?
No, I just think it'd be funny if he has some disease that makes him look that way. Like it's not even a mental thing.
All right, that's what I thought. That's hilarious. That something's wrong with them. Do you real quick, the Oscars, did you watch it at all?
I did, yeah.
We haven't talked about it at all because who fucking cares? But I guess it was, you know,
scandalous.
Yeah. Brad and I were saying we enjoyed Jimmy Kimmel pulling people out off the street.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Incredible.
When I saw that Starline bus, I'm like, this is the best bit
genius
ever.
And also it makes it such a, I hate that it's so formal and pretentious. I want it, like, when I see the monologue, I'm like, why does a comedy have to stop there? Mm-hmm. Like, have other. And so Kimmel was brilliant for that. But the ending, that's pretty crazy, right? I guess,
yeah,
you feel for the people who gave speeches and then
he handled it well. Everyone's talking about how well the producer of La La Land handled it.
Dick Tracy or Warren Beatty,
I hate that everyone's shitting on him.
No, because he didn't do anything
he's
wrong.
Innocent.
He did nothing wrong.
And he even tried at the end to go back up there and be like, look, I'm glad he explained himself.
But also, Faye Dunaway read the name. So
right. That's
no
on her.
And no one's blaming her.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's,
why?
It's because
Faye Dunaway?
Warren had the envelope first and he
but he gave it to her and she read it.
Right.
So
and you go
if
back.
Anyone's going to get shit on, it's her, but she shouldn't even deserve to be shit on.
No. Yeah.
Go back and watch the clip, though, and you see him look at the envelope like, this isn't right.
Yeah. Everyone needs to get off Warren Beatty's back.
Yeah. Hasn't he given us enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was worth.
And
he was dick fucking Tracy, for God's sake.
And you see all the ageism, too. People are like, oh, you never let an old guy.
I know, I saw those.
It's not an old guy. No. They fucked up.
Yeah.
Right? Leave him alone.
Yeah, exactly. Let Warren Beatty be Warren Beatty. There's my little nugget of knowledge for your Seattle people. One thing I posted, I said Warren Beatty T-Mobile commercials are being written right now. You know, because Steve Harvey got those immediately after. He got like a T-Mobile campaign like a week after his whole fuck up.
Maybe Warren Beatty did it on purpose. We can get that T-Mobile money.
Steve Harvey called him right afterwards. Fuck, man, it gets better.
Love it, dude.
Veeam, thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having
me. This was incredible. Yeah. Special CISO, There's No Business Like Show Business, and FahimOnward.com.
FahimOnward.com and LanceKantstopoulos.com. It's a great website.
For real?
Yeah, it looks like it was made in the 90s. It's great.
Oh, my God.
Going there right now.
All right, go see Fahim live and support his comedy so he doesn't have to go back to Boeing.
Yes, please.
Thanks, buddy.
See you, bud.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.